one guy said, once I stopped trying to make my cabinet software build like I did in 2005, I took off, right? Because it's just a totally different mindset on how you let the software do what it's good at. There are a lot of ways to build a box, a lot of viable ways to build a box. And if you're okay stepping back, just kind of reexamining your process, there's a lot of helpful nuggets when you do that versus how you've been building for the last 10, 15, 20 years.
Welcome to Verify Infield, the Millwork podcast. Your host, Jacob Edmond, CEO of Duckworks, will be interviewing experts in the industry to bring you insights and knowledge about the latest trends, techniques, and challenges in millwork. Whether you're a seasoned professional or just starting out, this podcast is for you. So sit back, relax, and join us as we explore the world of millwork. Here's Jacob.
Good morning, Nick.
Morning.
Thank you for joining me today and making time to come on the podcast.
Yes.
Today, we have Nick Frost, and some of you may have be very familiar with him. He is the owner of Frost CNC Tooling. He's a mosaic expert and started a very popular community on Facebook for mosaic users and shop owners. And today, we're going to talk about his background and getting into the casework and millwork industry and learning mosaic and starting his own tooling company. So I think maybe just to jump in and get started, can you give a little bit of an overview and a background of your journey into millwork? Because I know you come from a unique background of teaching, right?
So I'll kind of start back at the beginning. So I actually spent my 20s getting a PhD in chemistry from the University of Minnesota. And I went on to teach analytical chemistry there. And during that time, my wife and I bought a house and, you know, figured I could build some built-ins and stuff. So I bought a table saw. And little did I know that was starting a total change over the next roughly, I guess, 8 years or so of life. And loved that. And friends and family saw what I had been building, and it just kind of kept going, and finally got some actual paying jobs that were not friends and family. And I realized that there was, you know, kind of some business potential, and I really enjoyed doing it. And so I made the decision to, leave the University of Minnesota, in, 2016, and, was out on my own, total pivot 180, started a cabinet company, in early 2017. And that was really kind of software focused from the beginning. I had adopted Mosaic kind of early on, and my background, I think, with kind of being science and math, and actually did a lot of coding and some algorithm things. And that's the way my brain always worked. And so, you know, the software angle and the technical angle was always what I really liked. And woodworking was kind of a second skill. And so ultimately built that company up for a little while. We got really known for frameless. For anyone who's following along, I talk about that quite a bit, and modern stuff. But it ultimately got to a point where I wasn't really doing the fun stuff anymore that I really liked. Mm. And so I made the decision in kind of mid 2020 to figure out how to help shops with what I was good at, which was more the technical and the software side of things. And so as of like early 2021, started, Frost CNC, which was my, essentially consulting business. A lot of it was Mosaic, related, independent from the company, Mosaic. But it was also a lot of, frameless, you know, shops that realized that, you know, they needed to make that change or wanted to make that change from face frame cabinetry they were building. And so it was a lot of kind of helping pour gasoline on that transition with some experience. Mm-hmm. And then, while I was doing that, a lot of, the same kind of issues would pop up, with either some machines they had owned or tooling they had got with a kit or something like that. And so I've been able to kind of offshoot into some different products that I could see really needed, the market needed. And that's when Frost CNC Tooling was born. And that's only 9 months old as of like last week. So that's grown very quickly. We are in over 750 shops already, and really fueled by the community. People really seem to like them and say nice things about them. So it's been a very cool ride. If you would have told me 10 years ago this is where I would be, I would have called you crazy. That's for sure.
Yeah. So going back a little bit, I want to ask one thing. So you were a teacher or a professor at that point, right? You were teaching at the university level. And you bought a house, were doing some work on your own, you know, remodeling and that type of stuff. Do you have experience building stuff, doing woodworking before that growing up? How did you,
zero.
Or was it just zero? So you zero. Just were like, hey, I know I want to do some remodeling, probably want to do it affordably, need a hobby, yep. All of the above, and let me just research and do it.
It was a little bit. It was almost the other way around. I still very vividly remember just stumbling across a YouTube video of someone just building a cabinet in their garage. And it just had never occurred to me. You know, I thought cabinets came from a big store. You know, you don't know
right.
what you don't know until you see it. And I was like, man, you know, it's just a bunch of rectangles. I can figure that out. And that's where it all started. So it almost, I didn't go research for it. It almost found me in a way. And the rest was kind of history. I remember the first piece I ever made. It's actually still upstairs in my house here. And I hate looking at it when I walk in the door, right? Because I see every flaw in the first piece. I still remember, Home Depot cut that piece of plywood into squares for me.
Really?
You know, just all the way down to the
the
bare basics. And
And so what you were doing that on your own, said you kind of started friends and family. Hey, let me do some more jobs for other people since I'm doing this. Mm-hmm. All that time, was that still just like table saw, or did you invest in a CNC or any type of automation it wasn't until you started the business?
It wasn't until I started the business. Yeah, that was all, you know, there were some very large projects that ultimately came out of my 20 by 20 garage. You know, I did upgrade to, you know, at least a saw stop in a garage that couldn't really support its size, you know, and, but that was about it. And, there was very little outsourcing. Even I didn't even really know that was a thing. I didn't know there were people around that could, you know, fill in pieces for me.
Yeah.
And that's where I think, we had mentioned kind of some of these Facebook communities where I really like to come at it from that angle, because, you know, when there are new people that are just getting started, and I was asking those types of questions, I was there too, right? We all were,
yeah.
We all started that.
Right.
And so I think it's important to keep that perspective, even though as you try and push the field really far and do things people aren't already doing, you just got to still remember that you started there too.
In those early days when you're doing projects for yourself or just for other people out of your 20 by 20 garage, were you using software for the design side of things at all?
Not for the first little bit, but very quickly after that, yes. And even though it wasn't going to a CNC, I forget exactly what year I got into Mosaic, but it was pretty early on in its development, you know, version 3 or 4, and I think we're on 12 now. So it was early in that. But still, you know, like anything, I wasn't using it nearly to its potential. You know, you always look
right.
I don't know if you feel that way, but I always look a year back and it's like, man, you know, if I knew what I knew now, then,
if I could go back and play T-ball now, man, I'd be and killing it.
It's hitting home. Yeah, it's true.
Yeah. So, but it's always interesting to me, especially kind of from that, because I do think there's some aspect in woodworking in general. Like if you start out and your first job is in a big shop, you know, you're going to be influenced by all the people around you who've been doing it for years, right? And there's kind of this like, oh man, I don't know anything. I better listen to them.
Yep.
And to some extent, I feel like for a lot of people that stunts their growth and their, you know, like, I feel like from your perspective, do you feel like that those early stages, like looking back, obviously, if you knew what you know now, but to some extent, does that kind of curiosity and almost the ignorance at the time, did that help you to be more, you know, have more confidence to just try and to learn and to figure stuff out?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I think, this is going to sound bad, but like, I think if had I started in a big shop and had I known, how difficult the industry can be as you get started and you're trying to figure things out on your own, you know, not that I wouldn't have still done it cause I loved it, but it would have given me a very different early mindset, I think, for better or for worse. But yeah, all the way along, the fact that, you know, I was kind of in my own bubble for the first, you know, years of starting that. You just.
We'll be back after a quick break.
You love listening to podcasts, but have you ever thought about starting your own podcast? Maybe you want to build a brand, grow your business, or are looking for an excuse to talk about your favorite hobby. Whatever your reason for making a podcast, Buzzsprout is the place to start. Since 2009, Buzzsprout has helped over 300,000 people launch their own podcasts. Buzzsprout walks you step by step through the whole process and will give you powerful tools to start, grow, and monetize your podcast. Ready to get started? Click the link in the show notes to get our free step-by-step guide to starting your podcast today.
There are a lot of things that I could have done better and gotten over those hurdles faster if I'd seen it, you know, somewhere else already. But I'll say that there were some things that we started doing that I just didn't know no one else did. And I'm glad we did them the way that we did.
Right.
One of them being, you know, we did a lot of grain matching in our shop, and, you know, all of the shops around me all did that on sliders, and they thought I was crazy trying to do that on a CNC router. And you can't get that kerf. You can't program that, you know, all of those things. And I'm not claiming to have invented that, but that was one of the things I had never seen anyone else do. I'd never seen anyone else use eighth inch tools, combination of down shears and up shears, and do actual large scale grain matching on a CNC router before. So I was, and I'm glad I did, because you could take that straight out of Mosaic. You know, the layout works, hinge cups, all of the stuff is already done and it's right there in front of you. And that always made me a lot more confident in those projects if I could see it on screen, as opposed to, you know, one of my employees with a cut list on a slider or something, you know, especially when you're dealing with large scale sequencing where you mess up one in the middle and, you know, that's a very expensive mistake. So, you know, I think things like that where, you know, I guess I didn't know any better or different, that that wasn't really a thing around me, and worked out for the better for sure.
So I don't think we've mentioned this yet, but for those listening who may not know, so all the work you've done for the most part, like you mentioned, you were a frameless shop, but all along you were essentially building residential, right? And that's why that's a little bit more unique, because Mosaic is probably mostly residential casework shops or makers, and probably trends toward, or at least used to trend toward, face frame, right? And a lot of shops that you've worked with consulting, I think, where you've helped them make that transition from face frame to frameless, or be able to do both in Mosaic with a CNC and also just the fabrication. Because I've got a lot of people listen to this and come strictly from like kind of the commercial millwork side.
Yep.
And frameless is kind of a constant. Everybody's, that's what they're doing, right?
Yep.
But when you get in the residential side, it's more divided, right?
It is, especially in the Midwest and the South, where, you know, there's still a lot of markets that, you know, cabinetry isn't real cabinetry unless it has a solid wood face frame on it, which, you know, that narrative is changing. And once that narrative does change in a certain area, it's never coming back, right? We're never reverting back to the way it was. But, there are, actually a good amount of shops that do commercial work out of Mosaic. You know, the thing that it doesn't do well that others do well is, radius work, die wall things, you know, some things that are really critical in that space. But outside of that, I mean, frameless, Mosaic could handle frameless from the beginning. You know, that yeah, it's a good option for a lot of smaller shops. And even as people grow, it's still a pretty good option for the most part.
Are some people doing the hybrid of like a flush inset that's essentially just frameless, kind of with a mock face frame? Is that starting? Do you see that?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I think people achieve that, you know, pulling panels and fillers out flush with the doors, you know, pulling light rails out flush with the bottom of upper doors. You know, you can kind of frame it out. I would say that's, I mean, nearly 100% of the residential frameless you see out there now is some version of that. Very rarely it's usually very contemporary actually when it's not that way. Any other situation, it's pretty much always this faux inset idea,
right?
Which is what actually helps a lot of people sell it, right? Because, you know, I hear a lot like, my area will never support this, my area wants this, and it only takes a few, you know, because really what homeowners are after in the end is the step back 20-foot view, right? If it looks like an amazing space, then how we got there is not nearly as important, generally speaking. And honestly, the pictures that, you know, these homeowners are bringing shops, they're already full overlay anyways. Or their frame inset. You know, very rarely are they, you know, this partial overlay face frame anymore. So if that's what they're after, we might as well do it as profitably and easily as we can. So,
right.
Yeah.
So you started your own shop in 2017, you said, ran that for 3-4 years. Mm-hmm. But so it seems like towards the end, at some point, you started this community. Was it through that you kind of realized, hey, there's demand for this stuff that I've been doing that I didn't know other people weren't doing?
Kind of, but it actually happened a little more spread out than that. So when early 2021, I knew that I could help in this arena. I knew that, you know, that I had a skill set that shops could use, but I guess I didn't really know how many or kind of where we stood in that, you know, because like I mentioned before, we were kind of in our own bubble. And I feel like a lot of shops function that way and kind of think that way, that they're kind of alone in this thing. And there's not that many of me out there. And the truth is there's tens of thousands of you out there doing this. But I had started helping a shop locally here in Minneapolis, St. Paul area. And by all accounts, they had their act together. You know, if you look at their business and their pictures and their reputation, but when I got there, I realized they didn't, right? We were light years ahead of them on the software side and really utilizing a CNC to the best of its ability. And I think that's when it kind of hit me, like, okay, maybe, you know, if there are a lot of shops like this, man, then this is a really big potential for a business, but also to help in general. I mean, you know, help those shops really improve what they do. And so that's what kind of kicked it along. But I will say, you know, for the next 6, 8, 9 months, I was still not really on Facebook. I was not in some of these groups that we've mentioned so far. And so I was through word of mouth, kind of finding some customers here and there. And I was still unsure if it was a long-term viable business.
Mm-hmm.
And so I actually joined that Facebook group. I did not start the groups we're mentioning, the Mosaic group specifically, in August of September of 2021. And, eventually became, kind of admin with Jason, my buddy, later the following year in July. So we've had control of that group since then, but, that's when everything changed. You know, I joined that group just to help out, you know, and kind of answer some questions, and life really has never been the same. Once people can see what you're capable of and that you're, you know, a personable human being, and I put out some YouTube videos of some tutorials and stuff, and the floodgates kind of opened up. People realized what was possible with Mosaic, realized they were nowhere near doing that, and really wanted to pour some gasoline on it and get better with it. And so I've been able to help. I was just looking the other day. I think we're up to almost 700 shops with Mosaic in some way, shape, or form. And that doesn't include people on Facebook that are getting free help. So it totally exploded, which was amazing to see. And I just love, man, what that Facebook group has become. People are pushing Mosaic farther than I think they ever imagined they could, which is really cool to see.
So what was that transition like? Like, you were still, at some point you were still had your own shop with jobs and employees, it sounds like. But then you were also starting to help other people. Like, was there a moment in time where you said, hey, I need to make a business out of this, and to do that, this has to kind of shut down? Or was that a slower transition?
Through that summer kind of leading up to when ultimately that shop, when I decided to close that shop, I kind of knew it. I could see it coming. That's what I wanted to be doing. And so ultimately we, completed things, and I took a lot of the fall to kind of put a business plan together. I wouldn't say I just completely just went for it. It was kind of a slow start. So early 2021 was really when that all kicked off. And I think had my first actual customers in about February or March of that year. And then here we are almost 3 years later. And
so, well, and so there's that transition, so you've had a few kind of rebirths in your career, like, right? From teacher, professor to cabinet shop, owner, right? And from cabinet shop owner to consultant. And now kind of transitioned from consultant to tooling company owner, right?
That's right.
All of them have kind of been, well, at least since you got in the industry, it's been an evolution, it seems like, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you did a year or several years then as consulting and traveling and helping shops with Mosaic and Frameless and some of it. Then you started through that realizing, hey, there's a need for tooling and augmenting these CNCs and stuff. And what was the first tooling product you made?
So from the tooling perspective, the real driving force was, I would help new Mosaic users or CNC owners, and they would have received the tool package, with their CNC, and let's say they're a plywood shop and they want to make, half inch drawer boxes, and they do quarter inch backs and stuff, which ultimately I tried to steer them away from doing things like that. But initially when we start, I try not to just turn the world upside down in the first session, And so, but inevitably what would happen is, there would be a quarter inch down shear tool and a half inch down shear tool in this kit. And the first thing we would do is go try and data in a quarter inch back. That's not quarter inch, it's 0.22, and that tool doesn't fit. That tool can't make a groove that small. And, so we would go quick order, a 3/16 and, start to order undersized tools to be able to do this. Same with the half inch drawer boxes. And, cause that material was 0.46 or something. And so it dawned on me, if cabinet software is almost always going to do these kind of two pass minimum dados to be able to dial in width, why are we buying nominal tools? Why don't we buy undersized tools that are more versatile? You're still going to be doing two passes anyways, but now if they're undersized, it can do a lot more work for you, and you're not loading up your tool rack with nominal tools, basically. So that was kind of the driving force. But then, of course, I'm like, I can't have a down shear tool company, right? We have to have a full line of legitimate high performance tools. That was the only way I was going to do it, is if we could truly stand up to the market. And I found a partner, and we essentially developed that line, and that launched in March of this year. And on the premise of, offering high performance tooling, but we were going to do it direct only, right? We were not going to go down the typical distributor channels that all tooling in America is sold through. Yes, you can go buy direct, but often the price reflects the distributor in the middle anyway, still. And so we wanted to just combat that, right? If a small shop who was kind of my bread and butter in consulting, didn't have the power of scale and they needed to buy two tools, they were paying an arm and a leg to do it. And it just bothered me. So they get the same price that someone buying 20 tools gets. And that's the way it will always be. And I knew that we had something special, but to see in the Facebook group that I started for my company, to see the feedback and to see people switch over and say they'll never go back, has been pretty amazing. I will say something about selling a physical, tangible product and seeing that kind of feedback is almost, it might be even more than kind of the consulting feedback in a way.
Yeah.
Which is different. But yeah, that's where it started. So just to kind of sum that part up, I mean, one of our best sellers is a 7/16 down shear, which sounds kind of odd to people that have been doing this a long time. But the reason for that is, you know, for shops that are doing 3/4 and 1/2 inch materials, and those are likely undersized depending on what you're buying. Not so much in the melamine world, but in the plywood world. That tool can do an undersized 1/2 inch dado for drawer parts, but it can still do your 3/4 wide dado in the same two passes that a 1/2 inch tool was already going to do. So you basically buy yourself versatility with one tool in the rack. And so been very popular, which is pretty cool to see.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So today that is, you've shut down the cabinet shop. You're kind of scaling back the consulting and scaling up CNC tooling. And that is, full time what you're all into now, right?
It is. It is my full-time focus to grow that company. I still do, I would say maybe once a month I'll travel for a couple day consulting. So it's not totally dead. Mm-hmm. I still like to stay connected. I love those, like those 2 day stints. Cause it changes the course of those businesses, you know, and it's just cool to see, that happen. But yeah, sole focus is, growing this tooling company, which, as you can tell by my, path so far, it seems like every 3 or 4 years, a change, a shakeup.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't see that coming with this one just because, there's such large potential with this company. Yeah, it's, I thought I would have a little more time on my hands too, but turns out that's not the case either. No, I'm the problem. It's not the business.
Yeah. So, you mentioned those kind of like 2 day on sites that you still sometimes do.
Yep.
What does that look like? What is, kind of a general, like, hey, I'm going to go spend a couple of days on site. What is it that you're finding when you get there and by the time you leave, what have you got accomplished?
Yeah. So it's a good question. So typically, you know, someone will reach out, and say, you know, either it's usually one of two things. It's either, I bought my first CNC and I realize now I know nothing. I just don't even know where to start. Can we get, and I got jobs piling up. Can we like learn and get a job out the door? Can we like get some casework coming off the router? Can we, you know, it's a lot of that, but then, transitions from face frame to frameless on site. Just, we go through the whole shebang, get everybody set up and we do a quick mock-up so they can see. You know, because that's one thing I don't think people realize if they haven't been kind of following along on social media is installs are totally different. You know, it's a totally different mindset building that way versus a face frame cabinet. So we kind of go through that stuff. But then the other one is just like overall operations. I feel like we're not using the CNC to its capability. Our guys are still doing a lot of things on the bench. There's still a lot of labor involved. What are we missing? How do we, you know, get that to be more short up. And so they'll put a list together and things they think they need to be working on. And so I'll go down there generally with an idea of what we're getting into. But like clockwork, nearly every time, the most important thing that comes out of those 2 days is not even on the list. It's something that I see, you know, if we're walking through the shop and, you know, they're pouring a couple hours of labor into this one task every job. And it's like, you know, if we program this, it's going to take maybe 20 minutes. We'll do this thing. And that guy doesn't have to touch that ever again. And it's stuff like that. Using even for some of these face frame guys, like using rear mounting brackets, pre-located by CNC, because guys were blocking out and spending all this time. And it's like, that wasn't on their list. And I didn't know that's how they were doing that until I get there. And then you see it and it's, and they were using quarter inch backs and I wasn't there to talk about materials. And it's like, we did a cost analysis quick in like 10 minutes. And it's like, they were actually, losing money trying to save money by buying quarter inch versus if they had bought half inch backs, we could do rear mounting brackets. We're cutting a total material out of their process. So it's, they're all kind of free flowing. And I would say, some of the, like that one I just mentioned, I mean, that shop still, I still talk to them and they still mention that periodically, how much that has just completely changed, everything about what they do. So
really, it sounds like you recommend to everybody ultimately to switch for quarter inch backs. And is that something that you see? Cause quarter inch backs is standard on the commercial side pretty much, right? And I'm so bad. That's more just, at the scale and volume they're buying at, maybe it makes more sense, but it sounds like eliminating a skew as well as changing the way they machine and assemble
completely.
The two biggest gains from that.
Yep. It is. And, if you follow kind of what's going on Facebook groups, there are some commercial only shops that start to try this, and make this change too. The only real downside, in my opinion, is the weight, right? The cabinets do get heavier. But other than that, one material almost always trumps multiple when it comes to nesting efficiency, generally cost. Because if you look at how much quarter inch some of those shops throw away, it's, can be high depending on what else you're using it for. Go ahead.
This is for shops where the entire carcass is half inch?
Three quarter is what I was referring to.
Okay.
One, they set one skew by the router, and when that bunk of material's gone, there's a bunch of boxes by the door. I mean, you're not cutting two things to make a box. And a lot of shops that try that, don't go back. The only ones I know that kind of flip flop is when weight is a concern.
Are a lot of these shops that you've gotten to help consult with, like, existing shops that have converted from table saws to CNCs, for example? Like, are they kind of updating their processes across the board?
Yeah.
Or are they a lot of them?
A lot of them, yes. But I would say a decent number are also just kind of getting into the industry, starting with a router because they've been following along. And, but I would say the vast majority are existing businesses that have been around a while making that transition. And that's kind of a hard one to wrap your head around because, this actually just came up in the groups the other day, but, one guy said, once I stopped trying to make my cabinet software build like I did in 2005, I took off, right? Because it's just a totally different mindset on how you let the software do what it's good at. There are a lot of ways to build a box, a lot of viable ways to build a box. And if you're okay stepping back, just kind of reexamining your process, there's a lot of helpful nuggets when you do that versus how you've been building for the last 10, 15, 20 years.
So. That's what, like, from my experience, at least, like, especially on the commercial side, a lot of the struggle with progress is that, like, preconceived or, prior experience of, hey, well, we at some point we decided to do it this way and there was a valid reason for it, but maybe those reasons don't apply anymore. And so a lot of the times it's really the people change management that's harder than actually getting the software up to date, getting the machine up and running. It's hey, look, you're going to change the way you think about things, and a lot of the things that were constants before no longer apply. Or we've now got new information, new processes, new software, new things. So,
I want to just add to that it's a lot easier when you have 2 employees to 10 employees than when you have 50 to 200, right? It's those types of changes. They're, those shops are generally a lot more agile and can do that. Whereas, you know, it's a lot harder to change on a large scale. But no, I think you're right. I mean, and this is not a shot at the industry, but I do think that there's a lot of old thinking. You know, there's a lot of resistance to change, and I'm sure this industry is not unique in that. But you know, it's nice seeing there are, you know, a lot of younger people in the groups that are building up shops, and it's nice to see them come at it with a, you know, a fresh perspective. That, you know, kind of like you mentioned earlier, if I had started in another shop versus if I started on my own, this is one of the things that, you know, who knows how that would have gone. You know, because if that shop hadn't changed in the last 20 years, you know, I'm learning 20-year-old ideas. And, so.
Yeah. It's funny. I'm curious what your thoughts are on this, you know, having run a shop and now worked with a ton of them. Cause for the longest time, you know, I've always heard it said, and is that there's a very low barrier of entry to just start a cabinet shop and be a cabinet guy. That's kind of been like the thorn in the side of good shop owners that have been around forever, right? It's like, oh, well, I'm constantly competing a price against some guy with a table saw and a shed. Do you think that that is still the case? Do you think that the advent of, you know, software and CNCs has made it, has lowered the barrier of entry? You know, I guess it's part one of the question, and part two, do you think that, or maybe it's made it harder, right? It, you know, now you have to compete against shops that are more advanced. But also, do you think that that kind of idea is still the case, or it's going away? There's more serious people that are starting shops versus just, hey, I'm going to start and low bid a bunch of jobs and then I run out of business.
Right. No, I mean, I think, you know, that will never go away. But I think as a shop owner, you got to kind of hang your hat on that, knowing that you're going to win the long game. You know, it's not, to me, it's not about this bid today, which is easier said than done when you're staring at a pile of bills, right? But, you know, if you focus on the long game, price your work competitively, but to market value, that's another thing I just want to take a tangent on. And I think a lot of small shops are unfortunately costing themselves a lot of money because they still try to price things on time, material. And it's good to know those numbers, but really, yeah, you know, the market you're in is willing to pay a certain price for what you make, and you got to figure out what that number is. And then to me, it's working backwards to make sure you're doing it profitably. You know, cause if I'm in, Nashville, like the hottest market, like right now, people are paying a lot of money for cabinetry. But if I'm in the middle of, you know, Iowa, you know, that's, I'm not getting that price and I might be making the same thing. And so it's really understanding your market, that, really drives a lot of that. But, I think that software has lowered, the barrier to entry, in a way, because, you know, I look at my path, like I didn't know anything about cabinetry, you know, and once you can, for young people who are, you know, grew up with computers and software, it's really not very difficult to learn. And I'm just, of course, speaking about Mosaic, but I'm sure others are somewhat similar in that you can kind of, you know, work your way through it just on being young and computer literate, I guess, from the beginning. And, you know, so you can, I think, achieve some things that maybe in the 90s would have been a lot harder starting from scratch. But CNCs, you know, have never been more affordable. Software's never been more accessible. And I think that the barrier to owning one is as low as it's ever been. When you look at the payment on a CNC versus the cost of an employee, I mean, it's not really even close. I think that's changed the landscape, too. So I kind of skirted your question a little bit on whether I think it's helped the guy with the table saw in a shed. You know, I don't think if that guy doesn't invest in some of these things and grow, I don't think they're going to be around super, super long. And I shouldn't say that they might be, but you know, I'm not sure they're maximizing, what their business could be, you know, and ultimately, you know, as much profit as they can. And, that sort of thing.
Awesome.
We have a lot of those in the Midwest and the South, because face frame cabinetry, like that is, you know, table saw and a Craig, you know, pocket screw jig, and you're making face frame cabinets and a chop saw. You know? Right. So we got a lot of small shops that do that. But I think, again, it's hard to differentiate yourself if that's what you're doing. You know, it's hard to craft a niche that, you know, people will pay a good amount of money for, because there's a lot of people doing the same thing.
Right.
So,
well, and it seems like you're kind of competing against just going and picking up a face frame cabinet from the box store, right?
A lot of the,
unless you're doing a really high quality, you know, true face frame stuff, from a lot of the customers, they don't know the difference probably, right?
They don't. And early on, I think a lot of the customers will probably perceive you as it's either that guy or Home Depot or something. Which is like the worst comparison you want to be in, right? You got to figure out how to get people not thinking that you're even close, right? You have to change that narrative, and it can come with how you talk, how you hold yourself, the work they see, professional pictures. I mean, people need to see that you are doing a really good job, change their perception of your work. Otherwise, you're going to fight that battle forever, and that's a losing battle.
Do you find that, you know, helping these shops add the ability to do not just face frame, but frameless and flush and set, you know, hybrids and stuff like that, does that help them from a business perspective differentiate themselves and open up more opportunities and stuff?
Oh yeah. I mean, a lot of them, at least recently, some of these frameless transitions have been in areas where it's not very common yet. Right. So inevitably when you're one of the first to do it, in your area, it can go one of two ways, right? Either people immediately push back and you become the one that takes the beating. But ultimately I think what it really does is it puts you on the forefront of a style that is coming inevitably anyways, right? What I've said to some people along the way is you can either start to get used to this now, or you can be behind in 2 years when it's here. You know, it's kind of up to you. And I firmly believe that, you know, it's coming across the Midwest and the South. It's been a slow grind. There have been people, you know, in the late 90s who said it's coming too, right? But it is. It's slowly getting to everywhere. And I think Facebook has ultimately pushed that even faster, right? People see guys in rural America who switch to MDF doors and frameless cabinetry and make good money doing it. And their three builders who they thought were going to hate this say, yep, and off you go. So I think that's spurred it along quite a bit as well.
Yeah. Is there any advice, or I guess looking back, like you've effectively now successfully, at least from perception, started and profited from three businesses or business models, right?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe more that I don't know about. But from, a business owner standpoint, from a founder standpoint of just starting a business, successfully creating a business that you can run profitably. Are there things you've learned along the way, or if there are found that you have allowed you to be successful in each of them that you find other people, other business owners struggle with?
I mean, I think one of the main ones is, people ultimately buy things and do business with people they like. You know, especially in a small shop, the builders and the homeowners and the designers, when I was running a cabinet shop that we were able to do work for, I think one of the main reasons is because when they met either me or my employees, they enjoyed it. They liked the conversation. You can joke with them. I think that personal aspect of it in the small shop is incredibly important. And there are, unfortunately, there are guys that they just want to build and they just want to go home, and that kind of level of communication is not their forte. But unfortunately, it's kind of needs to be. It's very limiting. Right. And that's been that way in consulting. People feel like they can reach out to me anytime about anything. I like to think they enjoyed conversation and, you know, how it went. Social media has been fun. You know, people get a lot of help, but we also, you know, joke with each other, and it's created quite a good community. But tooling too. I mean, I'd like to think that, you know, people continue to buy it because of the merit of the tooling, but, you know, they tried because of, the help they'd gotten from me before, what they see online that, you know, he's always seemed to be helpful. So if he says these are going to work, maybe I'll give him a shot. Which is great, you know, and the fact that they're coming back because they do work is awesome. But I don't think even at any scale of company, you know, as with tooling, for instance, you know, we're getting into some very large facilities slowly. And even those conversations, you know, it's business, but they, you know, you need to like the people that you're talking to. It helps. So I would say that's maybe the thing I'll say to small to mid-sized shops looking to grow is product has to be good. You know, pricing has to be competitive, but profitable and all of those things. But man, personal relationships are insanely important to that, to growing that business for sure.
Do you think that there's, you know, because I'm sure there's, obviously you mentioned like you've always been analytical, you've always entered kind of software and processes and things like that. Obviously having a PhD in chemistry, I'm sure there's plenty of that that's helped you, especially as you get into the tooling and stuff. But I wonder how much more just being an educator and being in education, how much of that type, because everything you just talked about, you know, I'm sure being a professor, being an educator, you're dealing with people every day. And for you to be successful as an instructor, it's not just, do you know what you're teaching, but do the people want to learn from you? And are they picking up what you're putting down? A lot of that is the softer skills, right? Do you feel like there's things that you applied, obviously in consulting and as a business owner, you had to teach people to do things, right? You have to teach clients to get them to want to buy the product from you. It seems like there's probably a lot from your experience as a teacher and instructor that you've been able to translate.
I'm certain of that. I mean, I don't think about that really, but I'm sure, you know, that is what is been part of the success. I know in consulting for sure, because, like you said, you have to tailor your message to the person that you're talking to, right? It is very, you just have to see where they're coming from, understand their current skill set and their current level, where they want to go, where they want to be. And so, yeah, I'd like to think that, everyone who ever came to me for that kind of help got what they needed right at that moment in time, not what I wanted, necessarily them to know or have or be. And tooling's the same way. You know, you got to understand, the current issues at hand with the person you're talking to and the shop you're dealing with, what their personalities are like. Yeah, I would say that, you know, having a teaching background is, let's just put it this way, it hasn't hurt anything. Right. And I would say it's been a tremendous help. Yeah. So
awesome.
Yeah.
So what's in store for the future? What does 2024 and beyond hold for Frost CNC Tooling and for Nick Frost?
Yeah. So this past year, for the consulting side for just Frost CNC, the company, we did a series of kind of frameless 101 classes around the country. And we're going to do different topics, but we're going to do a couple more of those next year. And we'll be posting about those on Facebook and on my website. But from a tooling perspective, a lot. And unfortunately, I can't really mention much of what those things are. But by IWF in August, there's going to be two pretty large shakeups, I hope for them to be, that are ongoing and active. That I think is going to change the way people think about and use and buy tooling in this industry.
Really?
Awesome. When that does come out and it's public knowledge, I would love to talk about it again, but I can't, unfortunately. But yeah, we've got a lot of growth plans and a lot of really unique things that I think, you know, we had talked about how the casework industry is kind of old and some old thinking. I think, unfortunately, tooling is kind of that way too. You know, it's basically been the same industry for a decade or two, and there's been some innovation, but it's just kind of the same model. And we're going to turn that on its head a little bit. So
nice. So you'll be at IWF, the Atlanta show in August.
Yep.
You guys will have a booth there, and it sounds like you'll be announcing there or releasing some new products.
Hopefully shortly beforehand, but yes, it'll ultimately be showcased there. And yeah, our first ever booth. So anyone who's nice. Be there, come say hello.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, we'll be there. Definitely will be looking forward to come and see what you guys have at the show there.
Yep. Awesome.
Well, before we wrap up, there's two questions that I like to ask every guest, and I'm curious for your perspective. The first being, what do you see changing in the industry over the next 5 to 10 years?
What do I see changing in the industry over the next 5 to 10 years? Well, I mean, in my world, I think 10 years from now, face frame inset is the only style of face frame that'll be left. Hopefully, if I do my job, I think that style will be gone, or overlay face frame will, for all intents and purposes, be gone. And frameless will have taken over, as people see online what, you know, investing in edge banders and CNCs can do. And, I think you'll see an enormous rise. It's already started, but in pre-finished materials being more prevalent in residential cabinetry, people realize the looks they can achieve without finishing. I think that's just going to continue to go through the roof. I think those are the big ones. I mean, you know, the shops that just function on table saw or sliding saw alone are going to have an even increasingly harder time to stay competitive. You know, I think you'll see a CNC in basically every shop in 10 years, I hope. Yeah, I would say those are maybe some of the three things I would see.
Okay. And on the flip side of that, what do you see staying the same?
What do I see staying the same? I see effective pricing always still being a struggle. People don't you know how to price their work. I think learning the business and the salesmanship side of their business will always be a struggle for a lot of shop owners, and I hope they don't let that be the case. You know, educate themselves, take classes, become a better business owner. But I just look at my own path, and you know, I for most of it, I wouldn't say I was a true business owner. I was kind of a woodworker who grew a business, and not the other way around. And I hope I'm wrong about that. I hope that a lot of the industry starts to educate themselves on really just being a business that happens to make cabinetry and casework, as opposed to a cabinet maker who fell into a business. So I hope that changes, but yeah.
Awesome. Well, for people who are interested in finding out more about Frost CNC Tooling, about Nick Frost, what's the best way for them to reach out or to find out more?
So I'd say if you're on Facebook, search out the Frost CNC members group. We have almost 2,000 users there, helping with CNC and programming and tooling, and just a really good community. I would say join that for sure. FrostCNCTooling.com is where you can check out our tooling. And then FrostCNC.com has some things that are consulting related. Some downloads for Mosaic, if you're a Mosaic user, things like that.
So, okay. Yeah. Awesome. We'll link that definitely in the show notes for anybody.
Awesome.
I really appreciate you taking time out to talk with me today and share a lot of interesting about your background and your experience. And I think there's definitely a lot of people out here that are going to be reaching out and trying to find out more about the work you've done and how they can do the same.
Well, it's been great, man. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Thanks, Nick.
Yep.
We'll have to have you on again next year when you get the new tooling out.
Sounds good. I'll be there.
Thank you for listening to today's episode. Do you want to stay up to date about industry insights, new content, and our community of mill workers? Go to DuckworksMW.com to sign up for our newsletter. I'll see you in the next episode of Verify in Field.